Tall Sky Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Steven.
And I'm Kyle.
Thank you so much for tuning in today, and thanks for telling all of your weird friends about us. That's the best thing you could do for the podcast. Keep the grassroots growing. More listeners, the better, which brings in more stories and more dope shit. Today, I'm going to bring you guys some little tidbits of cursed objects that I've came across, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's definitely out of the norm for us.
Yeah. If anybody has any cursed objects they want to send to us,
let's go.
Send them over. But before we get into that, we got to go through the business. So check us out at all of our socials, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast. Find us there. Come and hang out. Share memes, weird shit. You know the drill. Just come and be part of the community. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like to share with us, Kyle's going to tell you how to get it to us.
You can use your smartphone. You can record yourself on anything that'll record yourself on your smartphone. You can shoot it over to the email, which is going to be hollowskypodcast@gmail.com. Or you can write your story out, send it directly to Steve, and then Steve will read it on the show.
Neat.
Which he loves. And
I do love reading.
I enjoy it as well.
Kyle enjoys listening to me read.
Yes, yes. That would be the proper correction on that. But yeah, you guys can send video over. You can send audio over. Whatever you want to do.
Just live your life.
Yeah, we can figure it out. If we can't figure it out, that sucks.
True. Next, if you'd like to support the show, we have a Venmo set up where you can buy us one of these delicious monsters. I've already opened it, so you don't get to hear that.
Yeah, and I already drank mine, so.
Thanks for everybody that's thrown a little bit of cash into that thing. We appreciate you.
Absolutely.
We also have a Patreon set up. You can go over there and check out the tiers, see if there's anything that perks your interests, see if there's any swag you'd like, or if you'd like to get some extra content, listen to Kyle play Roll the Dice.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
And we'll go come over and hang out there.
I need some WD-40 on this chair. It's squeaky as a motherfucker.
Mine's squeaky, too. We also, the best way that you can support the podcast is hop over to wherever you listen to your podcast, your preferred podcatcher, if you will, and leave us a dope-ass rating and review, preferably 5 stars, but whatever your preference is. Yeah. If you do leave us a 5-star rating and review, I will gladly shout you out on a future show. If you shouted us out recently and you haven't heard it yet, that's because we have gotten so many, which is definitely a good problem to have.
Yes.
Because it's so fucking awesome. You guys are like, I got like 200 in the hole.
Yeah, so it's crazy.
I'm trying to keep track of it, and chartables being dumb. Anything from outside the United States gets like folded in with everything else, and it's hard to see, and I'm trying to keep them straight. So just bear with me. Keep them coming, but bear with me.
Yeah.
Today's 5-star rating and review is from our friend Hearthstoner. They say 5 stars, stay weird. Honestly, I'm a huge fan of shows like this and listen to a lot of them, but these guys have stories I've not heard, like The Man from 3036, great episode.
Thank you.
And new facts I've never heard of, like from stories like The Dial Love Pass. It's also cool that I've never heard them say anything as crazy or didn't happen. It's a great place for people to get their stories out and not be criticized. Thank you all for what you two do. Stay weird. P.S. My mother-in-law is from Marshall, Illinois. Do you know that town at all? And if so, do you have any creepy stories from that area? Well, first off, Stoner, thank you so much for taking the time to write us out that little review and leave us those 5 stars. Again, it's my favorite part of the show, listening to what you guys think of us. Kind of a little jolt to the ego.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, we like to keep an open mind here on the Hollow Sky Podcast and really not cancel anything out, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, we've had our...
Life is fucking weird.
Yeah, we've had our own encounters, and anybody out there could just as easily say, you guys are full of shit.
Yeah. It's not a good approach to take.
No, and I mean...
You can be skeptical without being a douche.
That's true. That's probably very well said.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
You can easily be a skeptic and have an open mind.
I mean, apparently our... Never mind. I'm not even going to go there again.
I'm sure he'll leave another review, but
I know.
He'll probably get more pissed if we don't say anything.
That's true.
As far as Marshall, Illinois goes, I do not know where Marshall's at.
I don't either.
It's probably north or south.
Dope.
I'm good at geography.
You absolutely just nailed.
I wasn't going to search it up, but anyway, I don't know where it's at. If any listeners are from around the Marshall area, hit us up if you know of any cool urban legends or haunted houses or buildings or cryptids or weird shit. That way Hearthstoner can get a grip on it, and so can we, because dope shit from Illinois is dope as anywhere else.
I guess.
Not if you ask Kyle.
There's not very much dope shit about Illinois.
Pie saw bird.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully that's real.
Fucking literally about it. That's including us.
That's true. Anyway, on to our listener encounter of the day. It comes all the way
from one of our favorite places on the planet,
where everything is going to try to kill you. The land down under, Australia, from our good friend, Jeff.
G'day, fellas. Kyle, Steve, fellow Holoskites, I guess is what we're called. How's it going? So my name's Jeff. As you've probably worked out, I'm Australian, so I'll be giving you a whole bunch of fun stories from down under, a whole bunch of spookiness. This will be my first of several listener stories of the day, and with all the stories that I submit here, I will change everybody's names except mine. But everything else is 100% my remembered experience. So, yeah, cool. Look, I grew up in what I can only describe as a haunted house. Almost Skinwalker Ranch-ish in its variety. It's about 20 kilometers north of Sydney. And to this day, I have a very hard time trying to work out exactly what was going on. It was time shifts, doppelgangers, ghosts, poltergeists. I had one or two creepy things running around outside, staring in the windows. And this is all, you know, before I really developed a mad interest in the paranormal as well. So I didn't even know what they were at the time. I mean, I knew doppelgangers and poltergeists, but, you know, time shifts and stuff. I was like, So anyway, today's story is not that story. So, trolled you. Today's story happened about two blocks away from that house on my way home, downhill towards the creek. So, it's about July 2013. And I was driving back home through a very cold, damp, and windy night. It had been pouring all day, and it's middle of our winter. And it had only just turned into like this chilly, drizzle, horrible thing as I made my way home at about 8, 9 o'clock, I guess. So for all you car enthusiasts, I was driving a red 92 Commodore VP. For anyone who's unfamiliar with Australian cars, it is basically the car that a toddler will draw when you ask them to draw a car. But anyway, look, I'd done it up, dope sound system, a few tricks under the hood, and I thought it was pretty sick. So yeah, I was driving this hunk of shit downhill towards these twin roundabouts which sit on either side of a creek, and they're connected by a small stretch of road. It's not a bridge. The road doesn't so much go over the creek as the creek goes under the road through a tunnel. But as I get closer, I can see this young woman haphazardly running through the intersection, into the intersection, and I thought, well, that's a bit weird. So I get closer, and she's wearing nothing but this thin, flowy white dress. It's practically a 90. And I know how cliche this sounds, okay? I'm driving at night, there's a woman in a white dress, like, ooh, does she hitch a lift and then disappear from the back seat? No, nothing like that. I can't help the wardrobe choice. If you want to picture her in a tuxedo, if that makes things better for you, go right ahead. But I'm afraid that that's what she was wearing, as cliche as it is. So I drive into the first roundabout, and she's caught in my headlights now. And I instantly recognize her. It's my ex-girlfriend's younger sister. And she's a friend of mine in her own right. And for today's story, we're calling her Kara. I have one note in front of me, and it says Kara, so I don't forget. So Kara, not her real name, she's got absolutely no regard for her safety right now, okay? Like, she's just flailing about in this chilly, wet night, you know, barefoot, all over the road, kind of running in a certain direction, or perhaps away from something as well, you know? But as I drive through the intersection, I pass her, like, no less than, like, a foot away from my driver's side door, and it's without a doubt her without a doubt. And she's temporarily stopped now, and she's staring right into me as I pass. And that's a pretty careful word choice on my behalf. She's staring into me, not at me, into me. It's creepy. I've never seen a look on another human's face like it. It was, I don't know. I mean, it was somewhere between anguish, insurmountable fear, perhaps even anger. Like, it was terrifying. And now I'm going to pause here and just say that she was a truly lovely girl, okay? She's had a lot of ups and downs, a lot of personal tragedy, but a lot of joy, you know. And, but that said, it would not have been out of the question to find her in a situation like this, perhaps to do something silly or something that would cause her harm. So I'm a little concerned at this, obviously. So as I drive past her, as I'm driving past her staring at me or into me, I check my side mirror and she's just starts to move again, a bit erratically, but she's looking back at me. And I instantly know that something is really wrong. Really, really wrong, right? So as I enter the second roundabout now, I look through my window, my bright window, and she's still there. And she's frantically looking around, kind of on the ground. She's frantically looking around on the road, but not really moving towards either bank, just pretty much in the dead center of this crossing of road and river or creek. So anyway, I'm just like, oh, shit. So I mount the grass, I've whacked the handbrake on, I've bunged the hazards on. I look out towards her, I'm thinking, well, perhaps she didn't recognize me because, you know, her panic is visibly rising. So I look out at her, I boot open the door, I jump out, I slam the door, I look up again, and she's gone. Nothing. Like, it's just the cold, windy drizzle. My hazard lights, they're just going like this black intersection is just being lit intermittently with my orange lights, and like, that's it, gone. And the only place she could have gone to was over the side, over the railing, into the creek. So, you know, all other three directions have got really good visual coverage. I would have been able to see it if she'd legged up the hill, because it would take a while, you know, or if she'd gone down the footpath on the other side. Like, it would have taken more than a few seconds for her to get out of sight. So the only thing she could have done is gone over the side into the drink. I'm like, oh, shit. So I've run over, and I'm shouting her name. I'm like, Kara, Kara, it's me. It's Jeff. It's okay. It's just me, Jeff. It's me, you know. And, of course, there's nothing. So I've just run to the railing, hit it with both hands. I look over the edge. My panic is growing now. And as I said, it had been raining, right? So this creek has now swollen to the point where it could feasibly be called a river. So congratulations there. Creek got an upgrade. But she wasn't below, all right? She's a pale girl in a white dress, blonde, you know. She would definitely show up against the dark, raging waters, the dark trees, the dark everything. She was nowhere to be seen. I mean, it's not necessarily a fall that could kill you going over the edge, but you could definitely do yourself a mischief. I reckon you could knock yourself out and then drown in like 2 foot of water. Probably drown in an inch of water if you're, you know, particularly unlucky. Anyway, bit of a dangerous situation. The only place you could be now is the currents taken under the road and spatter out the other side. So now I'm the one who's running across this intersection with the same disregard for my safety that she'd just shown moments before. And I look over the other side and there's nothing. There's rocks, there's water, nobody. And I'm shouting her name. I'm looking up and down the road, even though I know she couldn't have got that far and hid. I run back across a third time and I just, you know, hoist myself over the railing myself onto the bank, because, yeah, there is obviously bank on either side of this. And the right-hand side has a taller bank that you can get onto and start to climb down. So I'm inching my way down this dark shoreline. I'm looking under the bridge and I'm just shouting again, you know, it's only me, it's okay, whatever's going on, you know, where are you? And my voice is echoing in the tunnel, but there's just no one here. And this is before there was torches on your mobile as well, or cell phone, I guess, others may call it. But yeah, no torch, nothing to illuminate what's going on. And by now we've fallen well below visual range of my car, so the headlights aren't doing squat either. So I can't see anything. So I fumble around for my phone in the dark and I do the first thing that's come to mind, which is call her sister, my ex-girlfriend. Look, I don't even know what to say. You know, I don't know what I'm going to ask, but the phone's ringing and I'm just thinking, ooh, and she answers the phone. And the first thing that I ask her in a panic is, I said, have you seen Kara? Do you know where she is? Which It was a bit nonsensical, I know, but I had nothing else prepped. It's just one of those situations, I guess. And then she replies, oh, yeah, nah, she's here next to me. Why? So, I'm just, you know, I'm wet up to the shins. I'm in this dark tunnel. I must have the dumbest look on my face because I don't know what to make of it now. I'm just looking around in the greatest confusion, you know, that I've ever felt, I reckon. And yeah, she says, yeah, no, she's next to me here. Why? We're just up at the shops. Do you need to talk to her? I was like, no. It's all good. Like, what would I say? You know, and I'm even more puzzled now. I'm just, what? And so she says, why? What's up? And I just said, well, look, I mean, I'm down here by the creek. I've nearly hit her with my car. She's gone over the side. And I begin to explain to her what I've seen as I make my way back up the side of the creek, you know, towards solid ground. And I tell her everything. And she says, I believe you. Which is not usually the reaction that you would get from someone when you tell them the person beside them is several kilometers away drowning in a creek. People don't get that level of trust from a current partner, let alone an ex, so I was pretty happy with that. Yeah, she's like, nah, I believe you. I know what your connection is like to the paranormal. And that's when I was truly shocked because, you know, paranormal hadn't even entered my head this whole time because what I'd seen was so real. I was used to seeing doppelgangers and realistic, very realistic, seemingly tangible apparitions quite regularly, but that had almost exclusively always been at home. And this was downhill from my house, of course, but, you know, I'd never seen anything this solid in the wild before. But it was also the only explanation that I had. Because, yeah, no one could have run out of the middle of the intersection that fast. Not the time it took me to, you know, get out of the car, slam the door and look again. Like, that's a split second. Even going over the edge and into the water would have been, you know, a stretch. It would have been inconceivable because it was the closest point of disappearance that she could have had, but still, nah. But yeah, I mean, obviously being my ex, she knew me very well and I told her and she'd been in my house, so she knew that the paranormal loitered around me like a bad smell. But I know what I saw, like I do. I know who I saw. I saw them, obviously, to the point of where I'd left my car running. Halfway up the footpath, called my ex from a freezing tunnel after shouting her name through the night, her sister's name, I should say, through the night. But no, Kara was safe. Neither her nor anybody else could have disappeared in that second. There had been nobody there. At least not in an earthly sense, I guess. So, yeah, all these years later, I mean, I've never really been able to come to terms with seeing her there. Like, I drive that way fairly regularly, obviously, being so close to my childhood home. I often try to gauge the distances you'd have to run from the centre to any sort of cover, and it is too far. It really is. And I also don't know why I'd see her in particular. Like, out of all my experiences, this is the only time Kara appears, right? Now, as I did mention before, she's a truly wonderful person, but her life is not without personal tragedy. Her partner, who was another childhood friend of mine, like I think I was like 5 when he was born, we kind of grew up in the same neighbourhood. He worked at the family business down one end of the street, and only a few years later he would be, very sadly, found dead at the other end of the street, leaving behind her with their infant child. And before the development of the area, that creek also ran parallel to the road, connecting the two events. And I've heard so often how moving bodies of water have a connection to, you know, paranormal events and can link to things and whatever. I mean, if that vision was in some way a harbinger of things to come, it was a really rubbish one. Like, it's given me no clues or insight at all. What are you supposed to make of that? So I don't know. I mean, there's also the possibility in my mind that it was another apparition, like another individual that just was showing me a familiar face, which is not unusual, at least not in my life. I can see why you would think it's unusual, but not for me. I can't think of any horrific events down there, though. Like, I do know in the early 1900s, like 120-odd years ago, young schoolboys would get in there skinny-dipping, and the young schoolgirls would join them, using the excuse of slipping on the wet rocks. And then when the parents would ask them why their undergarments or their uniforms were wet, they'd say, yeah, I slipped on the rocks. So, yeah, highly inappropriate, lots of fun. But I don't know if something might have happened there, which could explain a girl running around dressed like that. Maybe an experience lost to the passage of time that's left behind an energy at that location. I don't know. I also know that that creek was used in wool production historically before that as well. They'd wash the fleece down there before setting it out. So I don't know. I expect less of a connection there. Anyway, for the obvious questions, look, I know I said it was around 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and yet they were up at the shops shopping. Depending on where you are in the world, that might have sounded like a contradiction, but no. We had a few shops that stayed open till midnight. One of them was 24/7. And so to have a beverage-fueled, pajama-clad shopping trip at a weird time of night was a pretty enjoyable experience for a lot of locals. And, I don't know what else to say. The old Commodore, long since sold, so I'm sorry about that. If anyone wanted to buy the car from me, it's Gonski's. And I'm still friends with everyone involved to this day. And for anyone who's concerned, particularly after the last bit of information, Kara, assumed name, she's now living a very happy and stable life with her young child, and she's found love again, and life is really, really good for her now. So that's nice. She's fine. We're all fine here now. Thank you. How are you? Yeah. Either way, that's all I have on this sighting. The vast, 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 vast bulk of my other experiences have all been at home between 1990 and 2014. That said, out of all my experiences, this one was actually the least creepy, the most mundane one. So that might give you hope for the future. I'll get on to recording the other parts when I can, but either way, strap in for a wild ride when I return. But for now, back to the fellas, and stay weird, everyone.
First off, Jeff, thank you so much for submitting your story. It was very well spoken.
Yeah.
And well recorded.
For sure.
It sounded awesome. And I just want to say that if we ever decide to get a third host, you got your name in the bucket, because you're funny as fuck, dog.
Yeah, your description of the car was fantastic.
Yeah, Kyle about lost it when you said I did. Hunk of shit.
So. Yeah. And then the way you describe it, like, picture the car the way a kid would draw it, and that's what the car looked like.
I love how you primed us for this whole huge, like, down under Skinwalker Ranch.
Yeah.
Just all this weird shit, and you're like, but that's not the story we're going to tell today.
Yeah, you are purposely creating the next Stardust series.
But not telling us.
Yeah. So, good job on that one. On
to the actual encounter. That's weird, dog.
It is weird.
I'm trying to come up with some scenarios in my head. Could Kara have been reaching out to you for help in some way? Maybe it was some kind of spiritual connection she had with you that she needed you to reach out to her. I'm not sure, like, what kind of relationship you guys had, if you were close or however it went, but it kind of sounds like part of her was reaching out to you. But on the flip side of that, after you said that it was kind of like almost luring you down into the creek and it's got you running across the road all willy-nilly, like, that almost sounds like something putting you in danger. So that kind of was weird.
That is definitely weird. And it just has that, like, it has the classic lady in white to it, you know. But it's almost like it's sprinkled doppelganger on top of it.
Yeah, that is weird.
It's so bizarre. And I don't think I've ever heard any story quite like this, where it's been like almost the mix of two genres.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's so bizarre. It's so bizarre. Anyway, I don't, and at this point, I wouldn't even know what to guess. Like, because you would initially think a spirit, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that it looks like your friend completely tosses the curveball.
Because she's still alive.
Yeah, and you already ran the scenario of what if it's some type of, like, future event or premonition, but nothing has transpired at all.
Yet.
Yeah, yet. Which I don't really want to think about the yet part of it, because that would obviously lead to not very good circumstances there. Yeah, I don't know. It's bizarre, to say the least. Because, like I said, I've never heard, like, the mix of the lady in the white and, like, a doppelganger situation. Very strange. Very, very strange. And what's even better about all this is the fact that this apparently is your mild case, and you've got a shitload more to be sharing with us. So we will have almost, like, a mini Stardust before our episode.
I know, I'm stoked.
So it's gonna be sick.
He's really sold me on this. Yeah. Australian.
It's gonna be sick.
Stardust Ranch. But thank you so much for taking the time to submit your story. I'd normally bombard you with a bunch of questions, but you already answered them. Yeah. So thank you for doing your homework. If you have a story you'd like to submit, we've already went over that. So rewind. From here, I'm going to look into some cursed objects. I know we talked about like the Kennedy curse a little bit in an earlier episode. This kind of focuses on physical objects that supposedly have curses tied to them. Some of them are really bad, like fatally bad. Some of them are just paranormally bad. But I've got three or four that I'm going to talk about. First off, I'm going to go with the definition of a curse. That way we can kind of get that out of the way. According to Wikipedia, a curse is any expressed wish that some form of adversity or misfortune will befall or attach to one or more persons, place, or an object. In particular, a curse may refer to such a wish or pronouncement made effective by a supernatural or spiritual power, such as a god or gods, a spirit or natural force, or else any kind of spell by magic or witchcraft. In the later sense, a curse can also be called a hex or a jinx. In many belief systems, the curse itself, accompanying a ritual, is considered to have some causative force in result. To reverse or eliminate a curse is sometimes called a removal or a breaking, as the spell has to be dispelled, and is often requiring elaborate rituals or prayers. Kyle, do you believe in curses?
Yeah.
You do? You didn't even hesitate.
Yeah, like, the more we dive into all this shit, the more I definitely believe in, because I would throw curses in there with like the whole witchcraft thing. Like, yeah. I definitely believe that shit is possible. I don't know that it's what we think it is. I'm still kind of open for debate on that, but I do believe that to a degree, these things can definitely happen. You know, even if it just came down to like taking away from Stardust, you fuck with somebody's luck. You know, that could be a form of a curse, right?
Yeah.
You make it to where they have extremely horrible luck, even if it's just a one-time deal. You know, it's still, in my opinion, a form of a curse, you know? Yeah. So I definitely believe, at least in the possibility of it, without question.
Well, you are not alone, because...
Interesting.
Curses span across almost every culture, probably every culture.
Yeah, the first ones I think of right off the rip is the Egyptian ones on the on the sarcophaguses.
Yeah. From Africa to Middle Eastern to Mediterranean, German, and they kind of all just melt together in the United States, and everybody's curses kind of end up here.
Well, we are a melting pot, so...
Yeah, not only do they traverse culture, they also traverse time. Curses are mentioned in the Bible. I looked up a couple here. According to the Catholic Encyclopedia article on cursing, the Bible depicts God cursing the serpent, the earth, and Cain. Similarly, Noah curses Canaan, and Joshua curses the man who should build the city of Jericho. In various books of the Hebrew Bible, there are a long list of curses against the transgressors of the law. The 10 plagues of Egypt preceding the 10 commandments can be seen as curses cast from the rods of Aaron, and Moses acting on instructions from the God of Israel in order to enable the enthralled to come free from the yoke and enforce slavery and the like. Curses go on through the New Testament as well. There are many different examples of this if you look through the Bible. As Kyle mentioned, curses are kind of tied in to Egyptian mythology, and we in the West kind of modernized that and like make it real fucking Hollywood.
Yeah.
So we brush them up a little bit, but there are curses tied to Egyptian tombs, crypts, as well as mummies that aren't Egyptian. Like Otzi the Iceman has a supposed curse of people who came across him when he was found. They didn't have such good luck as that befell. Curses infiltrate our everyday media as well. Your favorite, whether it's your favorite sports team that hasn't won a championship in 100 years.
Touché.
Or your favorite Disney character who's plagued by an evildoer and can't fucking wake up until she's cured from her curse.
Touché.
What else do I got? People, teams, essentially everything can be cursed. But here are a few cursed items, in particular objects. I'm going to start with the cream of the crop, the big dog, and that would be the Hope Diamond. The Hope Diamond originated in Kollar Mine in India. Some notable owners include King Louis XIV, King Louis XV, Henry Philip Hope, Pierre Cartier, and Evelyn Walsh McLean. The origins of the Hope Diamond have also been sensationalized by Western media, with many stories from the late 19th and 20th centuries say that the original form of the Hope Diamond was stolen from an eye of a sculpted statue of the goddess Sita, the wife of Rama, the seventh avatar of Vishnu. Sounds cool as fuck and a perfect beginning to a curse, doesn't it?
It does sound cool.
Unfortunately, it was just found in a mine. That like sucks. Every other fucking diamond is in the world. But there are a lot of tragedies that are supposedly tied to this beautiful giant diamond. I've got a list of them here, and I will read them. I apologize if I butcher the names. Jacques Collet bought the Hope Diamond from Simon Frankel, and he killed himself. So, RIP.
Yeah, that sucks.
Prince Ivan Kanatovsky bought it from Collet, but then was killed by the Russian revolutionists.
Hey, Holocult. If you've been around a minute, you've heard us talk about Mood, an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your front door. Mood's found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you want. If you are new here, I'm talking about Mood.com. Mood has an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo HOLO. Forget the one-size-fits-all supplement that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood that you're looking for. Are you having trouble sleeping? Try the Sleepy Time Advance gummies for a mind-soothing calm each night. You need an extra boost of energy, some mental focus? Try the Morning Delta 9 gummies. If you're having trouble concentrating, you need some deep focused and enhanced creativity, try the Mind Magic gummies. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. You can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood in usually as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your front door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned before, Hollow Sky listeners gets 20% off their first order with code HOLO. So head over to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use our promo code, HOLO, when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at Mood.com. And that's promo code, HOLO.
Kanatovsky loaned it to Ledoux. Can't pronounce his first name, but whatever. Who was then essentially murdered by her sweetheart after coming in contact with the diamond.
Why? Wait a minute. Why the fuck would you loan that diamond to somebody? Like, here, just, you can borrow it.
No worries. At the time, it was kind of a like a
showpiece,
social status. You know, like you wear it out. And you're like, oh, damn, you're big shit.
Gotcha. Yeah. That makes sense.
Girls call another girl, yo, can I borrow your necklace?
Right.
It just got a $300 million diamond on it.
Yeah, I'd be like, hey, yeah, it's no big deal. I've got that money laying around.
A man who once sold it to the Turkish to a Turkish sultan was thrown from a parapet along with his young wife and child, who all essentially
that
died.
Sucks.
Sultan Hamid gave it to Abu Sabir to polish, but later Sabir was imprisoned and tortured to death. Stone guardian Kulub Bey was hung by a mob in Turkey. A Turkish attendant named Haver Aga was hanged for simply having the diamond in his possession. They're like, oh, how the fuck did you get this? Time to die. A taverner who bought the stone, who brought the stone from India to Paris, was torn to pieces by wild dogs in Constantinople.
What the fuck?
King Louis gave it to Madame de Montespan, who he later just abandoned and never talked to again. Just ghosted her because of the diamond. Nicolas Fouquet borrowed it to temporarily wear, but he ended up being disgraced and passing away in prison not long after. A temporary wearer, Princess de Lamballe, was torn to pieces by a French mob. Jeweler William Falls, who recut the stone not long after, lost his entire fortune and died a ruined man. His son stole the jewel from his father, causing his fortune to fall away. He ended up killing himself. Some years later, after Hendrik, it was sold to Francis Deliu, who also died in misery and want. Sounds terrible, right?
Yeah, specifically the ones being torn apart.
Yeah. But...
And the fact that there was two in that list is highly suspect.
So, if you got this dope-ass diamond and you want it to gain a lot of traction and worth... But you're in a time where social media doesn't exist, media as a whole doesn't exist. What better way to get people talking about this fucking diamond?
But then you would think that they would eliminate 90% of the buyers for it.
Apparently not. People are still trying to borrow this motherfucker.
Well, no shit. It's fucking one of the most well-known diamonds on the planet.
Yeah, I'd buy it.
I wouldn't. There's no way.
Unfortunately, a lot of these accounts cannot be verified. Substantiated.
Yeah, well, that kind of goes par for the course in what we do.
Yeah, that's true.
They are speculative. It is weird, best. Man. It is weird if they are true. Like, the dude who recut the diamond, and then ended up a ruined man, it's like, how ironic, right? Yeah. You know what I mean?
His son stole it from him, and then the son killed himself?
Yeah.
Like, that's not good.
No, and I mean, if any of that's true, that is rather ironic that... Because... You know, you have a couple of those on that diamond, and you're like, yeah. But you have a long list like that. If they are all, if they were all 100% true, that's a rather interesting list of deaths surrounded with that diamond. You know, that's very strange.
It makes me wonder if you took any substantial object that has a history, if you could connect the dots of tragedy, if you're looking for them. You know what I mean?
I don't know. That's probably, a good question. Probably, I feel like you could.
You probably could. You probably could stretch it into whatever you wanted.
I feel like you could. If you tried hard enough and you had the full list of all owners and owners' lives, you probably could.
They say that once rumors of the diamond started hitting the West, the mythology surrounding it was further and further fabricated to increase interest in the diamond and help push its price up.
Well, we're a bunch of weirdos over here, so I could see that definitely being true.
Yeah. There's evidence of several newspaper accounts which help spread the curse story. A New Zealand newspaper article in 1888 described the supposedly lurid history of the Hope Diamond, including a claim that it was once said to have formed the single eye of a great idol, and as part of a confused description that also claimed its namesake owner had personally brought it from India and that the diamond's true color was white. When held in the light, it is a superb and dazzling blue, which is also not that true. An article entitled "Hope Diamond Has Brought Trouble to All Who Have Owned It" appeared in the Washington Post in 1908. An additional account of the Hope Diamond's curse origins was a fanciful and anonymously written newspaper article in 1909. It was followed by another New York Times article in 1911, which gave the list of the supposed cases of ill fortune, which I read earlier. There's a whole list of people that supposedly have came in contact with the diamond and have not came out on the good end of it. Most of them I've already read. The diamond now currently resides in the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History, where it's said that the curse, surprisingly, has went dormant.
Well, that's because nobody's touching it.
Somebody's got to be touching that one, bitch.
I mean, the last time I saw it, it was in Titanic. And that motherfucker was floating to the bottom of the ocean. So
the Smithsonian's at the bottom of the ocean.
No, right, they retrieved it.
Okay. What about those motherfuckers that touched it?
They use a robot hand. Click.
Well, it's a robot that touched it.
Well, it's a fucking robot. Nobody cares about it.
Well, what if the curse transfers objects? Now you got a cursed-ass robot running around.
In the ocean, which we don't normally go in, so it's not that big of a deal.
It's true. So, I like where you're going with this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right.
But right now, as of...
It was probably responsible for sinking the Titanic, so... I think that's kind of where I was going with that.
That rose through in the ocean.
I know. That's fucking her fault.
Yeah, and look what happened to... Who was the guy?
Leonardo.
Jack, he drowned. Froze to death, and then drowned. In that order.
Yeah, that sucks.
Right now, it resides in the Smithsonian. It has an estimated price of $200 to $350 million.
Ooh.
I would take that chance.
Oh,
100%.
Yeah. I probably would, too.
100%.
I probably would, too.
It's because like $350 million, you want to tear me to pieces? Just let me enjoy it for like a year.
That shit would suck, being torn to pieces, but that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like, we could definitely quit our jobs and podcast full time.
For $350 million?
Yeah.
Yeah, we could probably make that work.
For sure.
Next, we have another little fatal object known as the Bassano vase. I'm going to start this story out. Nobody actually knows that the vase exists.
Interesting.
Its whereabouts right now are unknown.
So, a lot of people could deem that as stripping it of all credibility, but in our world, it kind of makes it a little more credible.
Makes it a little more fucking creepy because now nobody knows where the fuck it is.
Well, and on top of that, you know damn good and well that there are select items out there that are on the quote-unquote may not exist list that some of these rich motherfucking collectors have. Bet me.
I'm not arguing.
I know a thing or two. I watch a lot of fucking TV.
He does. And the beauty of that is that if the vase doesn't exist, you can't, like, test it.
Yeah.
Like, you just have stories. There aren't any direct witnesses to the power of the vase, only the stories that have been passed around that surround it.
Which is bizarre.
There's not even a backstory as to how or why the vase became so deadly.
Weird.
Like, with the Hope Diamonds, like, oh, it was plucked from the eye of this Indian goddess statue.
And which, like you said, that makes for a good story.
Yeah, 100%. From what we know from the accounts is that the vase is a simple silver design, about 4 pounds, and was made sometime in the 15th century in Italy as a wedding gift. It's listed on multiple websites as one of the most haunted objects known to mankind.
That's so weird.
That's fucking sick.
That's so weird. But, I mean, it already, like, subtly, like, low-key, it's all silver, it was made for a wedding, it's definitely cursed, without question.
That's what I'm
saying. Like, it's so subtle that it's like, yep, this thing's a dick.
It's gotta be legit.
Yeah, right? Yeah, absolutely.
The first account of the vase was in the 15th century in a small town north of Napoli, Italy. Legend says the vase was given to a young bride to be on the night before her wedding. Some suggest it was a good-natured gift that someone gave to her unknowingly, while others say possibly a jealous lover.
I was just getting ready to say,
pass that motherfucker on.
Straight up jelly move.
And regardless of the intentions,
you're taking my man.
This young woman never made it to her wedding.
That sucks.
Because guess what? She's dead.
That's not surprising. She was fucking with a cursed vase.
Some people say that she was murdered. Other people don't really give an explanation at all. All that we know is that very little information remains from this account, including the names of the bride and the husband. It's just kind of become a cautionary tale.
And what's strange about that is that the fact that that story transpired through time.
Where there's smoke, like there's fire, dog.
That's super strange, because you could definitely see some little asshole making up this story, but the fact that it basically got passed through generations makes it more bizarre.
Yeah, that it stuck with.
Yeah.
After that, the vase was given to another family member. Same conclusion, an untimely death shortly after receiving it. It was then passed to a third member of the same family who also died shortly after taking possession of the vase. At this point, the family's like, fuck, this is probably not good. So we're going to stop passing this motherfucker around. So they hid it. There's several claims as to how it was hidden. Some say it was buried, while others speak of it being hidden by a priest, locked away in a church or some other holy resting place.
Bottom of the Vatican.
That's where it's at right now.
Dude, I wouldn't doubt it.
Kyle solved it.
You know, and it just, like, listening to this just makes me think, and it even cements my theory even more, that there are people out there. I mean,
there's probably fucking collectors. Like, well, there are, because Zach Baggins is collecting all the
Look at what
shit.
Hitler was doing in World War II. He was raiding all them places for them sacred objects.
That's true, too.
So I guarantee fucking to you there are people out there that nobody knows about that are collecting this weird shit.
Zach Baggins and Hitler.
Wait. I mean, there's a connection there.
I didn't argue it.
We solved it.
Solved. But after they said that the priest locked it away in some church or some holy resting place, prayed over it and all this shit, the vase disappears. For hundreds of years. What happened to the vase from the time of the family is pretty much unknown, but it was discovered again in 1988.
Weird.
Bringing more hardship and death right along with this silver motherfucker.
Because I was going to say that even if it's not real, but if you were convinced that that thing was cursed, you could totally see a priest or somebody from back then hiding it somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Locking it away.
All you have to say is, this vase killed three people, and they'd be like, fuck that.
Yeah, and they would stash it somewhere.
They'd douche it with holy water, and then place it somewhere, buried under an altar.
And then, lo and behold, somebody later on digs in that place or stumbles on the mystery.
Remodels
the church, and they're like, whoa, shit, look at this thing. This thing's old as hell. And then they die.
That's true. The rediscovery of it said it was found by an unsuspecting young man who had dug it up somewhere. Again, the lack of specifics kind of is a commonality in these stories. So we don't have any locations. We don't have any names. Some say the guy dug it up in his yard. Well, other versions just skip over where he found it at all. They're like, fuck it, he just found it. It said that the Bassano vase was buried with a note that stated, "Beware, this vase brings death." Apparently, this warning had little effect on the dude who found it.
Yeah, because he was thinking he's going to get rich.
Yep. He was only looking at financial ramifications of the item, and he said, fuck this message, and threw it away. The vase was quickly auctioned off, sans the warning note, for 4 million Italian lire, which is $2,540 US, to a pharmacist. We don't know the name of the auction house, we don't know the name of the buyer, and we don't know the name of the man who sold it. But we do know that this poor pharmacist died merely 3 months after buying this vase, and his family then sold the vase to a doctor, who himself died at the age of 37, also a few months later.
Weird.
It was sold again to an archaeologist who was a collector of artifacts. He's the collector.
Ding, ding, ding.
Again, within 3 mere months, he too had perished. His cause of death was a mysterious infection.
What?
The causes of death in other modern-day victims have not been detailed, though. The stories continued with one last tale. Information about the last owner is even thinner than the previous ones, except for the fact that he died less than a month after taking possession of the vase. The string of deaths had not gone unnoticed, and the Bassano vase became unsellable. No markets would even handle it. If we're to believe the stories at this time, a family member of the last victim was said to have thrown it out a window in an attempt to break free of the curse. They're like, just fuck it.
Yeah, that's not I'm out of here.
This, however, sparred further tragedy, as the story will not simply just end with it being thrown out the window. The vase almost struck a police officer who retrieved it with the intention of fining the person that threw it at him. It said that the family accepted the fine for littering but refused to take the vase back. The police officer attempted to place the artifact in a museum, but word had already circulated about the vase being cursed. So strong was the belief that no institution would accept it. This fact seems somewhat difficult to comprehend, since most of the world's Egyptian artifacts, as well as other things such as the Hope Diamond, are suspected to be cursed, but museums gobble them motherfuckers right up. A few versions of the story tell of one police officer who could feel the negative energy of the vase before he took it upon himself to dispose of it. The Bassano vase is said to be reburied right now at an undisclosed location. Some people say it's buried in a lead box. Others say on holy ground of a, or in the holy ground of a cemetery. Some versions say both. As you can see, the details are sketch as fuck.
Yeah.
It changes with who's telling it. My source here that I read from said, in researching the history of the vase, there's no shortage of different theories and angles. Many paranormal sites go out of their way to add verbiage to kind of make the tale more creepy, make it more interesting.
Yeah.
Make it a much stronger story than it really is. But I don't know, man. It's on the top 10 lists of cursed items pretty much everywhere you go.
I could see it being real. And
Some things to think about, though. I looked up, they said the vase is made of silver, which, and it was made in the 15th century, which, if you look, that is a very uncommon material to be made at that time period. Porcelain was like a big fucking deal at that time.
Right.
And with silver, if you look into like the mystical and the paranormal side of silvers, silver's always what is always like on the side of good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So to try,
true.
You'd have to have a really strong fucking curse to be placed on a 4-ton chunk or a 4-pound chunk of silver.
Right.
So that kind of makes it a little questionable as well.
Yeah. I mean, but I do have a call to arms here. For all you crazy ass collectors out there, get a hold of us. I'd be interested in talking to some of you who have these off the book.
Yeah, no shit. Like if anybody collects cursed items,
yeah,
holler at us.
Yeah.
We'd like to talk. I know our friend Emily collects a bunch of weird dolls, but she said she doesn't think any of them are cursed or haunted because nothing weird has happened yet.
Yeah, that's a plus. But how interesting would it be to talk to somebody who has like these ultra rare, highly sought after
paranormal items,
or just even like paranormal, what you would
black
call
market,
yeah, like what you would call your sacred items, like things that people fucking scour the planet for,
like the Spear of Eternity.
Yes, if you have that, please let's talk.
Send it to us,
dude. Yeah,
the Ark of the Covenant, the Holy Grail, send that shit to us.
Yeah, we will.
We need it for the podcast room, because right now all we got is a bunch of stickers.
How ridiculous would that be if we just had the Spear of Destiny nailed to the wall?
Eternity.
just nailed to the wall. Like, check this out, guys.
It would be horrible. I don't know. I don't have
response. It would be, not only would it be fascinating to talk to people like that, but it would be insane to know that those people are legit real, and these items,
there's gotta be, bro.
Well, I mean, they look at all the shit the Vatican has. That, I mean, I know it's just talk, but supposedly the basement of the Vatican is chock full of shit.
The Smithsonian too.
Yeah,
like all the giant mythology and shit that supposedly goes to the Smithsonian but is never seen again.
Touche.
Oh man, if anybody works at the Smithsonian, tell us all the fucked up shit you guys got.
Yeah, no doubt. Sick. And get us in so we can see giant bones.
Bigfoot bones. Maddox once told me, he's like, hey dad, if you ever want to get rich, all you got to do is find a Bigfoot bone.
He's not wrong.
He was about 4 years old.
He's not wrong.
You're fucking onto something, kid.
He is not sick. Wrong.
My neck, I got two more, and they're not as fatal, but still weird. And I thought they were interesting, so I'll bring them up. First, we have the Hexham Heads. The Hexham Heads were a pair of small stone heads, about 6 centimeters high, found in 1971 in the English town of Hexham. The heads became associated with alleged paranormal phenomenon, but their exact origin is a point of controversy. The heads were originally dug up by two boys, Colin and Leslie Robson, who found them in a garden in 1971. A number of sources, again, the water was muddied, state the year as 70, 71, or 72. After the discovery, the Robson family reported a ton of strange phenomenon, with the heads allegedly being moved when no one was in the room, bottles being mysteriously thrown across the room. The Dodd family next door to the Robsons also reported weird phenomenon, with one of the boys' hair being pulled in the night, and his mother, Nellie, seeing a half-man, half-goat figure leaving the house shortly afterwards.
That sucks.
That's crazy. Fucking goat, yeah. Man.
Yeah. Like, these ones definitely sound just, like, legit, like somebody put a curse on it. Yeah. And maybe they were fucking around one day, and they did it, and they're like, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and bury these things in the yard, because they are really starting to get trippy.
I mean,
or I'm going to bury them in the neighbor's yard.
People get desperate.
Yeah.
Like, if sure. The vase is absolutely. Killing everyone in your family, you're just like, fuck this thing, and just throw it out the window.
Absolutely.
Hit a cop in the face.
And he snacks it up, and he's like, well, guess what? I'm dead.
Next, the heads were given to a Dr. Ann Ross. She's an expert in Celtic artifacts. According to Dr. Ross's own account, she woke up one morning and saw a part wolf, part man figure walk out of her room.
Nope.
She followed it downstairs, saw it heading toward the direction of the kitchen, but then lost track of it. A few days later, her daughter Bernice told her that after returning home from school, she saw a large, dark, werewolf-like figure on the stairs that jumped over the banisters and into a corridor before vanishing. The wolf is believed to have some relation to the Hexham wolf that killed livestock in the winter of 1904. Ross also reported the feeling of a cold presence, her study door bursting open with no apparent cause, and another apparent sighting of a dark figure. Knowing Dodd's experience, Dr. Ross equated all of these phenomena with the Hexham heads, and the incidents allegedly stopped when she removed the two Celtic heads in her possession out of the house. So that's kind of weird that previous to this happening, there were reports of this Hexham wolf cryptid that was killing livestock in the same city how many years? 70 years before.
Right.
Maybe someone to get rid of the Hexham wolf tied it to those heads, buried that shit.
Possible.
And then when they dug it up, oh, here's the goat man. Oh, here's werewolves.
Yeah, ooh. It's absolutely possible.
A man named Desmond Craigie reported that he was the creator of the heads, making them in 1956 for his daughter while he was living in the house later occupied by the Robson family, along with a third head that became damaged he had thrown away. Craigie, who worked for a company that dealt in concrete at the time, he allegedly created the heads, made some replicas to demonstrate his claim and how well he did them. However, these replicas were so shit that no one believed him. They're like, oh, dude, when you get out of here, dog.
When you said that, the first thought that came on mine was Clout Chaser. That's all he is.
He's like, fuck yeah, I made them. Yeah. I'm going to make some more if you guys don't chill out.
Well, and he's trying to push his concrete head making business.
Yeah, that's
all he's fucking doing. That get out of here with that shit.
He's like, yo.
Check out
my Etsy.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was. He's clout chasing.
The original heads were analyzed by Professor Dearman of the University of Newcastle, who concluded that the items had been molded artificially rather than carved, which also leads to the fact that they might be more modern as opposed to old. The original heads were later given to another man, but him and the heads vanished, and their whereabouts are
unknown.
Unknown, because that's what happens with all this shit.
Of course it does. Why wouldn't it?
Because it's not known.
I think it's fascinating, nevertheless. And like I said, if this ever gets to anybody who collects this fucking shit, and it's serious. You're not just fucking clout chasing. You're not trying to mess with us, but you're dead serious. Let's talk, because that would be an extremely interesting conversation.
Fuck yeah.
Even if it had, I mean, no offense to all of our listeners, but even if it had to be 100% off the book, like that, just knowing the fact that there are people out there that chase these things.
That's what I'm going to start doing.
Would be fucking bizarre.
I'm going to throw this out here right now. If any of you want to go on eBay and buy a cursed item and send it to us, do it. Here's my shipping address, P.O. Box 145, Fieldon, Illinois, 62031, Hollow Sky Podcast. Send us some cursed shit. Preferably nothing that's going to make me die, but if it does, yeah. Also still don't care.
Cool.
My last one, I've got a cursed painting because this is another aspect that is kind of common in the cursed object world. This painting is called The Hands Resist Him.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's creepy.
It is creepy.
My source here is the lineup. I'm just going to kind of read you little tidbits from the article because we're running out of time. This painting, it's disturbing whether it's fucking cursed or not.
I agree.
It shows a young boy standing next to a girl doll. She doesn't have any fucking eyes.
It's creepy.
She has hollow eyes and a sad, downturned mouth. The doll is holding a strange device with wires coming out of it. It kind of looks like a bomb, but I don't know.
He's got like a tin head.
He's got a big-ass forehead.
Yeah.
If it's cursed, I didn't mean anything by that. Don't haunt me.
He's looking at us like he's pissed.
He's squinting at us. He's glaring right.
You know what his face kind of reminds me of? That Vigor guy from Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah, Vigo?
Yeah, Vigo.
That's what's
the Carpathian.
Great.
The so weirdest now your house part... is going to fill with pink ooze.
That's fine, whatever. Let it eat. The eeriest part of the painting is that there are a whole bunch of fucking little kids' hands in this window in the background just kind of reaching out.
I didn't notice that at first.
Yeah, well, they're there.
Yeah, they're definitely there. It's fucking weird.
But as with any kind of curse, there are a bunch of stories that come with it. It was painted in 1972 by William Stoneham, who was on contract to produce two pairs of paintings for $200 a month. In 1974, it was put on display at a gallery in Beverly Hills. It was reviewed by an art critic in the Los Angeles Times. And I don't know why that's in there. It doesn't matter. This is where the story gets weird. A few years after the painting was sold, the art critic, Henry Seldes, died. That's why it is. Then the gallery owner died. So I told you guys this wasn't fatal, but I lied because now I'm reading this and everybody's dying. 1984, John Marley died. I don't know who John Marley is.
He probably touched the painting.
Oh. It said that the painting was purchased by the actor John Marley, best known for waking up next to the horse's head in The Godfather.
Okay.
So he bought the painting. He croaked. R.I.P. John Marley.
Anybody who would buy this painting is a little weird anyways.
The painting disappeared, not resurfacing again until 2000 in a bizarre post on eBay. New owners said they were trying to sell it because it was haunted. Their claims included that the boy and the doll in the picture would fight each other at night,
that
terrifying their four-year-old daughter. They set up motion sensor camera in the room for three nights and claimed they captured the boy in the picture, leaving the frame and coming into the room, fleeing in terror.
That gives me goosebumps.
Bro.
You know what? On top of that, prove it. Let's see the video. Let's go.
Skeptics might think it was a marketing ploy, because these curses definitely are not that, but they are. The owners warned buyers not to bid on the painting if they were faint of heart or unfamiliar with supernatural events. More than 30,000 people visited the auction page. Many reported just looking at the painting made them feel ill or upset.
I will post
a picture of the painting on the social medias.
I feel weird looking you guys, at that dude.
That way you guys can stare into it and see if it makes you want to throw up. Because Kyle's not feeling good right now.
It gives me goosebumps looking in his eyes.
Because he's looking right at you, dog.
It does feel like he's looking right at me. You need to avert your eyes, you little punk. Because I'll kick Steve's computer and break it in half.
Yeah, don't do that, though. I'll tell you what, if I get a copy of this painting and this little motherfucker comes out, he better be paying rent. That's what I'm saying.
No, he's going to get choke slammed.
The painting sold for $1,025 to a buyer in Michigan who is reportedly keeping it in his storage and refusing much, much bigger offers to sell it.
Why?
Because the internet sensation, Stoneham came forward with what inspired him to paint such a haunting scene. The boy, he said, was himself. It was modeled after a picture taken when he was 5. The title comes from a poem written by his then wife. It reads, in part, "The hands resist him like the secret of his birth." Yada, yada, yada. In 2016, Daryl Kyle O'Neill published a dramatized account of the notorious haunted artwork entitled "The Hands Resist Him, Be Careful What You Bid For." His narrative uses the painting as a basis for a fictional tale about a serial killer known as the Life Swapper. Unsurprisingly, O'Neill had his own eerie experience with the artwork. This is a quote from O'Neill. "I first saw it online when I was living in Dubai. I printed it out and left it on a side table next to some other documents printed on the same printer with the same paper. Anyway, I went to Italy for a month. When I came back, the air conditioning had gone out and everything was green with mold. The TV, the bed sheets, my daughter's cot, everything, all of my suits in the closet, all the documents I had printed were all green. But right next to them, the only thing that was untouched was a copy of the painting that I had printed out."
That's bizarre. That even so copies dope. Of the painting.
So, yeah, that's what I got. On weird. Some cursed objects. I know there are a ton of other supposedly cursed objects. James Dean's car, Robert the Doll, Annabelle the Doll. Just go to Zach Bagans' Occult Museum and you'll see a whole ton of cursed ass shit. The Warrens collected a whole bunch of haunted and cursed stuff. Like, there are numerous, numerous cursed objects. That being said, if anybody has any cursed objects or objects you think are cursed that you'd like to share with us, shoot us an email and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, for sure.
If anybody comes across anything that's supposedly cursed and it's not unreasonable and you want to buy it and send it to us, you can do that too. Just revert back to where I sent our shipping address.
For sure.
You want to give me a copy of this hands resistant painting? I'll put it in Kyle's house.
No, I don't think so.
I'll put it in my house.
It'll go in your house.
Fuck it. Let it eat. Anyway, that's my cursed objects. Kyle believes in curses. Let me take a look at my life. Yeah, I believe in curses. So, let's hear what you think about them.
Let's go.
Until next time, stay weird. Or check us out at all our social medias. Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok. Come and hang out with us. Tell us about your curses. And until next time, stay safe. Stay weird. Send us some cursed shit.